Welcome to the conference room with this week's guest, Pascal Weinberger.
People who refused to adopt it, they were kind of still doing manual calculations everywhere. That becomes a handicap, and I think like we'll see the same thing happening.
Welcome to The Conference Room, a weekly podcast where business leaders and growth experts kindly share their experiences, actionable tips, and secrets to successfully grow a business. If you like the podcast, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a 5-star review. It'll really help us out. And I really hope you enjoy this week's episode. I'm Simon Lader. Welcome to The Conference Room. Good afternoon and welcome to The Conference Room. I'm joined by Pascal Weinberger. Pascal is the co-founder and CEO of Bardeen.ai, a leading AI company focusing on automating repetitive and manual workflows across web applications. Previously, he built and scaled other ventures leveraging AI and machine learning for industrial applications and the AI team at Telefonica Alpha, Europe's first moonshot factory. Pascal is also an active angel investor in AI and deep tech companies globally, and I'm delighted that we've found time to string him into the conference room, kicking and screaming, to talk all about it. So Pascal, good afternoon, and welcome to the conference room.
Great. Thank you so much, Simon, for having me.
It's a pleasure. So every hero has an origin story, and you're the hero of our story. So tell me, how did you get from just starting out to becoming the co-founder and CEO of Bardeen?
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, I was always very curious about like machine intelligence and, you know, what we now call AI in general. And as I started my first company, we were looking into like computer vision, and most of what I was doing early in my career was computer vision. And as you pointed out in the bio, like I had this huge pleasure of working with Telefonica at this like really exciting project where we were doing like long-term high impact innovation. And it's like a really cool job on paper, but I found myself kind of doing all this repetitive manual work all day long, like for recruiting or for project management, like having 50 tabs open, copy pasting things around. And so Bardeen was really born out of like scratching our own itch, as they say. Like we were really kind of trying to solve this problem that we had ourselves, in getting rid of all this like, you know, boring repetitive manual work. With the very beginning, my co-founder and I kind of we independently had projects both called like me.ai or mini me that were trying to kind of like replace ourselves for those boring tasks. And then, you know, chatted a bunch and started hacking away at a prototype for what then later became Bardeen. And yeah, now we're like three years in the journey, and it's super exciting.
Okay, great stuff. So we mentioned in the bio that Bardeen is it focuses on automating repetitive and manual workflows across web applications. What exactly does that mean?
Yeah, sure. I mean, so the way you can think about this problem space, and I'm sure anyone here is familiar with this problem where we have like 20 tabs open in the browser. I mean, on a good day, maybe even more than that. And what we end up doing as end users is we become like the routers for our work applications. Like we have a lot of different workflows and all of the stuff that we're doing, for example, whether there's like recruiting someone or, you know, filing bug reports for project management or doing outreach for sales. It always involves more than one of those apps that we're using. And we essentially end up, you know, doing all the like manual monkey work, like copy pasting data around. And what we're trying to solve for with Bardeen is really like reducing the friction in those workflows and essentially building, you know, you can think about this like as shortcuts that like you're on a page, you have access to the context, you know, what you're going to do, you and the driving seat as the end user, you make that decision to, for example, outreach to that potential hire on GitHub, and then you click a button and Bardeen then takes care of the copy pasting and boring busy work for you on the back end, like the, you know, adding that candidate to your candidate management system, writing the outreach email in Gmail, and like, you know, sharing the, you know, profile in the Slack channel or looking him up on LinkedIn and whatever else it is that you're doing. That's all kind of like taken care for you on the back end. And really the goal with this is to, bring automation superpowers for everyone. Today it's kind of something that's reserved for big companies that have engineering teams and that have, big RPA solutions and the budgets to do the implementation projects for those. And what we're trying to do with Bardeen is really make it super simple, make it like accessible to everyone so that I can, as a, average end user, I can describe in my workflow in natural language, the same way that I would like text it to my assistant or to my friend or to like a junior analyst in our team and just say like, hey, here's what I need to do. Describe it to me in natural language. We then have an AI that kind of like understands the intent of that and builds the automation for you. That's then readily available. And you can then, whenever you have that task to do, just like click the button and Bardeen then goes and executes it for you. So that's really kind of like the way you can think about the product. It's a Chrome extension, so it's super easy to set up, very easy like to get onboarded. Yeah, there's many different use cases across, sales, recruiting, project management, and like, virtually any kind of workflow that we have.
Okay, great stuff. So I'm fascinated by how AI can really make an impact. Excuse me, can really make an impact in the to an average person's working day. Okay, and living at the sharp end. Okay, you must be seeing huge amounts of changes and incredible changes certainly over the last kind of 18 months or so. Okay, so from your perspective, how do you see AI impacting the modern workforce?
Yeah, I think it's still a moving goalpost. I don't think we've really figured out yet what's going to happen long term. I think one thing is certain is that, thanks to the advent of large language models and ChatGPT and applications alike, the technology of AI has really become accessible to the end user. It's not like a new phenomenon. Like we've had AI and like agents and things like that around since decades now, like, at least 5, 10 years. The difference is that previously you either had to know how to write code or how to use like TensorFlow and other machine learning frameworks to really like access those models, or you had to know how to use APIs and like write your own integrations and like leverage APIs, which is, a small fraction of the population that actually knows how to do that. Then ever since we got ChatGPT and other, very simple chatbot language technologies, now everyone can do it. Like, you see taxi drivers and people, in a subway and everywhere, like using ChatGPT to like answer queries about their day or like ask questions to the model and so on. So it became insanely quickly adopted and readily available for everyone, which then obviously drives this question for everyone at, any company that's like, how can I use this at work? Right? Like we use it all in our private lives, like we use it to write, invitation cards and cooking recipes and all these things now. And, back to the question, like, what can I do at work with it? I think the way we've seen this done successfully at companies is obviously on the content creation and marketing side. So, writing copy, creating videos, creating short form content, that's already something where you see AI and this generative AI revolution really taking hold. We've seen less adoption, but I think that's the exciting thing that also we're working on in the general productivity space. So, you all see like the standard, like, summarize this text for me or generate a response to this email or like those kind of like text-based things. But then there's still a lot of things that we do. Like we still copy paste the email into ChatGPT and then tell like generate an answer for me and then like copy paste ChatGPT's answer out of the email. So there's still a lot of friction like across those workflows. And like one thing that, at Bardeen we're really trying to solve for is like resolving and removing all this friction across workflows, even if they include like existing AI elements in it, right? Like, the write me an email draft example we just talked about, or even more than that. So I think that's kind of the next step. And then ultimately long term, one thing that I'm excited for is very early days, but will be this like really like agent-driven technologies, right? So it's something that you just tell it something that you want done. So for example, like write me a report about the conference room podcast, right? What's the audience? How many listeners? Who's on the podcast? Tell me about Simon Lada, like a bunch of the context around it. Kind of like what you would traditionally give to like a, let's say, analyst to do. You just give it to an AI, and then they can go and, complete a sequence of tasks that then kind of feed into like one larger overall goal. And that's something that's like agent technology is very nascent, it's very new, but I think that's kind of ultimately the next step that, like, this year, next year, we will see like a lot of development in, and that really unlocks like big productivity gains because you can completely delegate certain tasks to those models. That's something that, at Badin, we just last week announced a big release around that, for example, where we like make it easier to build and deploy those models in production. But I think that's really something that this year we will see a lot of excitement about, this idea of agents.
Wow, that's amazing. And how do you feel about people that say that the problem with AI is that it's gonna take people's jobs away? And I mean, there are people that say, hey, that's just progress. When we invented the spinning jenny, then a lot of weavers lost their jobs. And really, with every advent of technology, it does mean that it will cost certain people's jobs, right? But do you feel that with AI that it could ultimately mean that within the next 10, 20 years that the entire, if you like, unskilled workforce will be replaced?
I mean, it's a very big debate. I think there's I personally think that there's a lot more opportunity with AI than there's threat of people being replaced. I think precisely because, like obviously at Badin, we're working to like create something that empowers you as the end user to become more productive versus being replaced. And so there are other companies out there that are selling, like bots that are supposed to replace people at work. So there's different forces, but I think like everything that I've seen that tries to re entirely remove people from those workflows, I don't think the technology is fully there yet. I think there's a lot more, like those models, they deal with uncertainty, they deal with hallucination, they deal with like, not being able to understand 100% precisely every little set of instructions that you give them. So having a human in the loop and having someone kind of in a driving seat that then uses AI technology to be more productive and to do a lot of this, heavy lifting and repetitive tasks for them and so on, I think that's really more the model that at least we at Badin believe in, and a lot of companies that I see in the space are also pushing more in that direction versus the, fully replace the human out of the loop. So I think I'm more optimistic that at least for the next sort of cycle of this technology, it'll be more of a, like a technology that is used as a as an empowering, like, as Microsoft brands as like co-pilot, something that's like, it's not piloting the plane itself, it's like the co-pilot. It makes the pilot better and more productive and safer, but it's not fully replacing the pilot, right? So I think that's kind of the way we think about it and what I see happening. Having said that, at the same time, there's really cool, exciting new jobs that are being created around this, right? And I think being an early adopter of any piece of technology, frankly, is always something that, in the workforce is heavily rewarded, right? Like when first like Excel came around, I think, doing calculations became much easier. And then there was a subset of people that really embraced Excel and became amazing at it. And now they, run investment banks. And the people who refused to adopt it, they were kind of still doing manual calculations everywhere. That becomes a handicap. And I think like we'll see the same thing happening now with AI and generative AI and AI in the workforce, where there will be a set of people who embraces this and they use it as a superpower. They will become, 10x more productive and do more work with the same time and the same resources than anyone else. And I think that's going to become a winning skill in the future versus kind of resisting the change. I think that there will be some consequences to that that aren't great. So, I mean, I think it's ultimately up to the individual. I don't know any company out there that is like really targeting to replace people and put people out of their jobs. I think everyone's trying to empower and, make people more productive. But ultimately, it's up to the individuals and how they deal with this change as with any other change.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Oh, and do you see any kind of downsides to the development of AI in terms of, I mean, I know that sometime last year, government wanted to get involved in terms of overseeing the development of AI, and some would suggest that maybe they're looking to avoid the kind of doomsday scenario, like in the Terminator movies, where the robots rise up and enslave us all, right? Do you see this as, I mean, science fiction movies aside, what do you see as the potential dangers of AI and whether government oversight is necessarily the answer?
Okay, I'm not a politics expert by any means. I think that people are much more qualified than me to answer the political and regulatory side of this. Having said that, I think there's a again, with any technology, there are risks. I think it's better to have those conversations in public now than it is to just ignore the fact and like wait until it's too late and then deal with the consequences. So I very much welcome all the conversations that are happening, as you said, in the last year, year and a half or so about regulating AI, understanding the use cases that we want and that we don't want in society, especially want military, cybersecurity, bioengineering. There's a lot of use cases that have potential impact far beyond the digital domain. Right, like when we talk about productivity and things like that, then it's largely restrained to like digital domain and productivity output of people. But there are use cases that have severe consequences in, for example, biotech or cybersecurity, physical infrastructure security, defense, weapon engineering, and so on, that those we should absolutely talk about and think about, like, what do we want to allow and what do we not want to allow in terms of uses of this technology. Having said that, I think there is some regulation that has recently happened, especially here in Europe, that we're kind of shooting ourselves in the foot to some extent with over-regulating technology that is still in a frankly nascent state. Like, it sometimes look like AI has figured it all out and like everyone knows exactly what's going to happen and so on. I think at least most of the people I talk to in the field, we're all still figuring it out. And it's a very new kind of the technology universe. And over-regulating something early, I think, has a few downside effects. One is like you don't exactly know what the long-term implications are. So you can't really correct for the really bad things that you can't yet think about. And secondly, you're slowing down pace and you do it in a geographically constrained area where now, for example, take the Europe versus US versus, China example. Europe has made it very difficult to build and deploy large AI systems. US is much easier. China, I think, is kind of a free for all if you have the right connections and capital. And that obviously like leads to different process levels and like speeds of innovation in different areas. And if you don't want to be left behind in something that can be such a fundamentally changing and powerful technology, then leaving some room for innovation, aka not over-regulating, I think is critical. So I think we should be having debates. Is now the right time to make definitive decisions? I don't know. I don't think so. And especially like if you're going to make definitive decisions and rule in terms of regulation on it, then definitely like leave some room for experimentation and innovation to happen and don't, choke it before it's even really started. So yeah.
Yeah, no, I think you make some very, very good points there. Absolutely, and you're right. Yeah, sometimes we've certainly seen with other areas like stem cell being another one from a few years ago, where because of political pressure, stem cell research, particularly in the US, where you would argue had the most to gain and the capital and the resources to really move forward because of political pressure. It really stagnated. So it would be I think a shame to see the same thing happening, with AI. So I'd like to shift gears a little bit and talk about how you built your team. Okay. So when you look, what I think is fascinating when it comes to sort of very new areas of technology, you're in many ways kind of, building the parachute after you've already jumped off the cliff. Okay. because you've already kind of committed to a future without that future being certain, okay? And the more cutting edge the technology is, the more acute that is, okay? So with that in mind, how did you go about building your initial team? And whether it was from an investment point of view, from a resources, from a talent point of view, how did you go about putting those initial building blocks of Bardeen in place?
Yeah, I think it's a, I'm a skydiver myself. So, like, I think I like this analogy of jumping out of the plane and like building the parachute as you're falling. I think in many ways, building a startup company is a lot riskier, from that perspective than in skydiving, where you have like all your fail-safe mechanisms and backups and so on, which you don't do in a startup, right? So I think that's a really fair point to think about. I'm lucky in the sense that both my co-founder and I, like, this is not the first rodeo for us. Like, I've built and started companies before. I've worked at bigger companies. My co-founder Artem, he has built and led engineering and product teams at large organizations with, 100 plus people, that he was running. So we kind of had the, fortunate situation to be able to pick and choose some of the people that we've previously worked with. And that's it. I think that's honestly one of the biggest advantages you have as a, repeat founder, versus someone who's doing it for the first time, say straight out of college, is, you already kind of know who to trust and you know how to work with those people. And that's the, usually the hardest, one of the hardest things to figure out as you're building your own company, especially in the early days, is like the first 10 hires are so crucial. Like they set the pace of the company, they set the culture, they set just kind of like the mindset, everything, like your whole culture and DNA as a company is essentially being shaped by those first few hires, first 10, 20, 30 hires that you're making. So we were very deliberate about that, and we brought on very technical team, people who have like been there and done that before, at least in different related areas. Like, we deal with a lot of like sensitive data from users and systems that have to be highly reliable and highly functional. So we brought on people who have done this before in, for example, banking sector and so on, or security sector. At the same time, we had to build a team that has been able to really innovate with like net new ideas around algorithms and systems and AI that haven't been around before. So we have a few people that we're working with that are, best in class from Stanford and so on, that have really proven that they know how to innovate and deeply understand those systems that we're building. And then kind of on top of that, all you have to layer this like, cultural and what's the DNA of the company that you want to build? Filter essentially, which we really optimize for like self-sufficient, self-starters, people who you don't need to micromanage, and you kind of can align the whole team on a broader vision and a goal, which for us clearly is like we want to, make automation accessible to everyone and help people unlock their, automation superpowers by allowing people to automate their work. And then under that like broad umbrella, there's a few different like experiments at any given time that we're doing, and people are very self-sufficient with that in the team, right? We have even interns that have a new idea, and then they build it and they prove it out. We get data, we have the whole analytics lifecycle and everything, and then we can like test and validate hypotheses very quickly. And as a young company, I'm sure you've seen this before, but as a young company, I think the one thing that we really over-index on is like experimentation speed. I think it's like, as a big company, if you have like big Fortune 500 customers and so on, you have to index for accuracy and like reliability, right? Because if you're serving customers in the healthcare or finance industry or something, like you have to be reliable like 100% of the time. But then that comes as a cost of your speed of innovation. Because if you have to be high reliable all the time, you can't do fast experiments and try things quickly, to see what works, what doesn't work. So we're very much on this, like, we're a product-led growth company. We have a, very fast feedback cycle with our customers. Literally, it takes you like 5 minutes from the moment you discover Bardeen to like downloading it and like, starting to automate your first workflow. So that allows for like a very fast feedback cycle as we work with our users, but also internally. And that's really the thing we're optimizing for. So we keep the team very small. We're like 30 people. but again, very high caliber. Everyone's like super excited about working on this, and everyone has a lot of like ownership and drive decisions in this.
Right. Okay. Great stuff. So, what would you say your three tips are for somebody to be successful in the sort of using and deploying AI, and perhaps even in terms of building an innovative team?
Tips, that's tough. I would say number one is, as I pointed out before, like find people who you can really trust and let like run with it and allow for room for experimentation. Again, it's a very nascent technology. Like, I think at this point, like we're all kind of, trying to build a plane as we fly it and like trying to figure out what works, what doesn't work. So build your team around that, allow people to do things and fail with it and learn from it quickly. Second thing I would say is think about the broad principle. So like in AI right now, there's a lot of hype. Like you see every day or every week, there's like a handful of new demos on Twitter of cool things that look really sexy in a Twitter demo, but like I think fundamentally are, possibly like flawed approaches and like don't make sense in the long term as you think about building a scalable business. So like really think about first principles as you're figuring out what you want to do here, right? Like which approach makes sense, what's the technology that makes sense, where does it make sense to use AI, and where does it also not make sense to use AI, right? Like I'll give you an example. We build automations for repetitive workflows. So if something's highly repetitive, AI fundamentally has to make up a new plan and decide something new every single time. So there's a bunch of companies out there that are trying to solve this idea of automating repetitive tasks end to end with AI, which, if the result is different every time, like I'm not going to trust the system like in my day-to-day work if it does a different thing every time. Like I want something that's reliable. I teach it once how to do it, and then like once we agree on this is the right way of doing it, like I want it to be reliable and do the exact same thing every single time. And those are typically things you don't achieve with AI systems, right? Like, so really thinking about first principles, like where do you want to apply AI machine learning and where do you maybe not want to apply them, and being deliberate about that and thinking that through from first principles, I would say is the second important thing. And then thirdly, I would say, like don't jump on every single hype train. I think right now I see a lot of founders also like when I talk to, young entrepreneurs and invest in companies and so on. See a lot of founders that like just jump on the next best thing, right? Like a couple of months ago, everyone integrated a chatbot in their app. Like everywhere, like literally every system now has an interface where I can talk to the system about whatever it is, my documents, my Zoom calls, or whatever the product is. And now every founder under the sun is like integrating the same thing into their apps. In some cases, it makes a lot of sense. In a lot of cases, it doesn't make any sense to do that, right? So like I think, having this like deliberate debate about like, does it make sense to integrate this new exciting thing into my company or not, I think is something that I would like to see more often.
And if people wanted to learn more about Bardeen, how could they learn more? What's next for you and for Bardeen?
Yeah, so I think like, for us, we're out there, like just bardeen.ai. I'm sure you'll put the website or something in the show notes.
Absolutely.
From there, like, feel free to try the product, share feedback with us. We're easily accessible through the website, through our social channels on Twitter, LinkedIn, anything. We're always eager to learn from, things users want us to automate for them. What's next for us at this point is really like about scaling and bringing Bardeen to teams. I think we have, over 250,000 users on the single user front, like who use it individually. There's obviously a lot more we can improve and learn there. But for us, the next big step is to bringing automation to teams, like smaller teams and enterprises over time. So that's the next exciting thing that we're working on right now.
Great stuff. And if people wanted to reach out to you and communicate with you directly, what's the best way for them to do that?
LinkedIn, Twitter, Bardeen, like the website. That's the easiest places, yeah.
All right, great stuff. I'll make sure all your socials and Bardeen's website address is in the show notes. Pascal, it's been an absolute joy talking to you. I think you're right. AI is the new frontier. It is very nascent, so there's so much more to come, and it's going to be incredibly exciting watching on the sidelines. Not just AI and the AI world in general, but Bardeen in particular, and some of the incredibly exciting things that are going to be coming down the pipe very soon. So, Pascal Weinberger, thank you so much for joining us here on the Conference Room.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Simon. It was super fun.
Coming up next week on the Conference Room, I'll be talking to CEO of Abstract Security and career cybersecurity leader, Colby DeRode.
The customers will actually tell you, they will give you the roadmap. They will give you the path, but you have to actually listen. And that's the challenge that I think a lot of entrepreneurs have, is they think that they have all the answers and that they have created this, you know, perfect thing in their mind. And they don't actually, when they talk to a customer, it's kind of in one ear, out the other, and they don't actually listen to what the customer's saying because they have all the answers. I prefer to go into a meeting and talk.
Thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate it. And make sure you visit our website, theconferenceroompodcast.com, to see all the other episodes and to get access to the show notes and resources mentioned in this episode. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your network, or better still, go on to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other podcast platform and leave us a 5-star review. It'll only take you a moment, but it'll mean the world to us. And please don't hesitate to tell us which topics you'd like us to cover in future episodes. To get in touch, drop us a line in the comment section or send us a message on social media. Just search for The Conference Room Podcast or me, Simon Lader, on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, or TikTok. I'm always open to a conversation. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you'll be alerted when a new episode goes live every week. Thanks so much for listening to The Conference Room, and until next time, keep talking.